Barring a court decision to the contrary, Arizona's newest and most controversial immigration law is set to go into effect on July 29th. One of the arguments against Senate Bill 1070 is that it fails to address any of the real causes behind illegal immigration. In the following interview, Tony Paniagua talks with Judith Gans, the Program Manager for Immigration Policy at the U of A's Udall Center. She enumerates many of the fundamental reasons why illegal immigration occurs in the first place, and points out that it's not just Arizona that has blind spots when it comes to seeing the bigger issues.
The immigration policy program at the Udall Center is designed to create a space to step back from the fights about immigration long enough to understand how to think about it. And when I give talks to people, I say my goal here is to help you understand how to think about this issue, not what to think about it.
Do you think we're going to be able to reach that point where people can actually sit down and have a reasonable dialogue about immigration?
So far, the dialogue hasn't been so reasonable. I think for that to happen, people need to kind of cool off a minute and understand that there are really tricky and sort of complicated trade-offs involved in the issue, and that it does touch on, you know, sort of core ideas about who we are as a country. But any immigration policy requires being willing to make trade-offs. Any immigration policy creates winners and losers, and there's no way around that. If we could figure out the perfect policy where nobody, you know, was hurt and everybody benefited, we wouldn't have so much of an issue. But basically, we have to figure out how we're going to make some difficult trade-offs.
It's not a black and white situation, as
no,
you've noticed.
No, it's not. You know, people benefit and other people are hurt. There's no way around that reality.
One example, a tangible example of benefits we were talking is, for example, somebody who owns a construction company. He can hire people for probably less than he would have to pay somebody else.
Right. You know, right now, our legal system does not have many channels for low-skilled workers. That's why so many of the low-skilled workers are undocumented. And the construction industry has certainly benefited by having that pool of labor to draw on. So undocumented immigrants have been an important source of framers and roofers and masons, some of the sort of low-skilled trades in construction. And so the construction owner or the electrician who's high-skilled or the plumber who's high-skilled or the bank who lends to the construction industry, they're all better off because this pool of labor is here. And taxpayers are better off in that sense, because the construction industry is bigger than it would have been. Because wages are lower, people can afford to build more houses. Consumers are better off because houses are cheaper, but the workers who compete with the immigrants are worse off. So that's a good example of, you know, sort of the winners and losers involved.
And then some people who have been talking about the so-called comprehensive immigration program would say, or would make that argument, well, if we are going to hire those people anyway, for example, the roofers or the people that are picking vegetables, let's just go ahead and give them the paperwork. Why doesn't the United States do this?
Right. I mean, that's really the solution in the long run, is to create the legal channels and to think carefully about what the economy needs from the immigration system. And, you know, it's interesting. The economic forces are really what's driving this. If you look at who is immigrating to the United States, there's a lot of people at the high skill level, PhDs in science or computer scientists or biologists or doctors or whatever. We have legal channels for those folks to come in. And then there's a lot of people at the low skill end of the spectrum where there are relatively few native-born workers. We don't have legal channels for those folks, and that's why they're here and undocumented. The vast bulk of the native-born population of the American workforce is relatively high-skilled, but not super high-skilled. We have a lot of college graduates. We have teachers. We have, you know, people with BAs. But the educational attainment profile of the native-born workforce is kind of barrel-shaped, and then the immigrants are sort of hourglass-shaped. We have this vast bulk of people in the middle of the education spectrum and then relatively few people at the high end and at the low end. And that's where immigrants are coming in. So they're stepping in to fill gaps. And what we need to do is have the system allow those channels, especially at the low end where they don't exist now.
And what do you think about the philosophy that the border should be sealed first, enforcement first, and also deport the estimated 12 million people who are here illegally?
There's sort of been this longstanding debate in Washington where some people say we're not going to be able to enforce the border until we reform the system, and other people say we're not going to reform the system until we enforce the border. Well, right now, the enforcement first folks have won that argument. The problem is that the very large economic forces that are driving this migration are still there. And, you know, as I said, the world does not have a very good track record at legislating against large economic forces. These economic forces are really overwhelming the legal system. And I think it's going to be really difficult to enforce the border until we actually bring our legal system in alignment with those economic forces.
Even the parties themselves are split. The Democratic has two sides and so does the Republican.
That's right, yes. And this is part of what makes the politics so difficult, is that the Republicans are split between business interests who want the labor and then social conservatives who are worried about social cohesion and how many people can we integrate. And then the Democrats are split between labor interests who want to limit labor and progressives who are worried about poverty around the world and the sort of humanitarian issues involved with immigration.
And we know this is a global problem or a global challenge when it comes to immigration. You were telling me that Canada probably has a good example of what might work for the United States.
Yeah, it's a whole different approach. I mean, the U.S. legal system is based around family reunification. Canada has a slightly different system where they have this point mechanism based on the attributes of the immigrant, and it includes things like level of education and knowing English, and I'm not sure of all the details, but once you accumulate a certain number of points, so knowing English gets you 20 points or whatever it is, once you accumulate a certain number of points, you can immigrate. No questions asked. You know, you're welcomed into the country. And in 2007, when the U.S. Senate was taking up and debating immigration reform, that was one of the ideas that was kicked around, was moving away from the family reunification structure to some sort of a point system. But any immigration system has to answer two questions. How many people are we going to let in? And what attributes? And that's where the politics get complicated in answering those two questions.
And then finally, if you had the magic wand and you could sit up there in Washington, D.C. and talk to all of the people that make the tough decisions, what would be the first thing that they ought to do?
I actually think people in Washington, D.C. already know what needs to happen. If I had a magic wand, I would use it not in Washington, D.C., but out in the country, out around the United States, to say, you know, understand why this is happening. It's too simple to just demonize immigrants for breaking our laws. They're here because of some complicated structural issues that we're responsible for. Our legal system doesn't have the legal channels. Our economy is pulling people in. So my magic wand would be to say, okay, let's step back a minute and try to understand this issue, understand the trade-offs without demonizing people, and recognize that it's really complicated and it's not so simple of them coming here to harm us.
Okay, Judy Guns, the manager of the Immigration Policy Program at the Udall Center for Studies in Public Policy, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.